Good morning, everyone. Today is a special circumstance. We're talking here from Kameno Island House, and due to fast rising circumstances, we're without the group today. We're meeting with you all virtually over the internet, and most of all over the internet. I just have taken up the thread of conversation through the postings. And so if you want to check that, I'll be adding more to the postings on the website. This is entitled Fire and Grace. My dear friends, it was last Memorial Day since my last posting. I resume now according to the inner prompting. The intensity of my inner and outer experiences over the summer have been quite something. The baptism of fire hinted at by Jesus is an internal conflagration of vast proportions. For many, this baptism is of relative short duration. But in certain cases, divine will uses this fire to help purify not only his devotee, but for the greater good as well. Therefore, this fire may extend over many years or even the span of a lifetime in rare cases. This fire may or may not create heat in the physical body, but it definitely rages through the subtle body. I have lived with this baptism of fire for nearly 40 years now. In the beginning, the purpose was more to do with this body and karma associated with it. Then it gradually began to be of help to others, and in this third stage, it has to do with being of service to this world. So, the notion of suffering and eternal fire is certainly a ring of familiarity to it for me. Unlike the mindless notion of eternal fire and damnation, there must have been the product of a very sadistic mind. This fire is exacting, intelligent, and works with precise purpose. It is remarkable that otherwise intelligent people will parrot back the words of eternal damnation as if it is the most acceptable truth and perfectly normal. I can only suppose it is a concept unexamined. For eternal damnation for choices made during the 60, 70, or 80 years many people get to live on this earth is a preposterous notion, even for the worst of offenders. On the other hand, the law of cause and effect is a great teacher. Enact those things that go against truth and right behavior, and they will boomerang back to you. Thus, what you sow is what you reap. This makes perfect sense. And when you receive the effects of what you have done, you will learn. The fact that some seem to get away with literally murder is only a short-term view. The soul cannot erase what he or she has done and must eventually face it all. And the greatest punishment for ignorance and wrong behavior is separation from God. For God experience is the fulfillment of the heart's desire. And only through union or yoga with the divine will the soul be at peace and know enlightenment. All creation is marching toward the inevitable union with God. The only question is how quickly or how slowly a soul proceeds. Right actions brings about salubrious results. Wrong action increases disconnection from the true self. Thoughts and actions attuned to the divine result in profound peace, joy, and light. There is no escaping this truth that is not born of man, but of God. It is mathematically true and precise. Therefore, all spiritual practice must be done with an eye for attaining this inner attunement and the results it yields. This is the great inner teacher. The process of learning to do this can be fierce as you face all those things you have done on your soul's journey away from God. However, if the price is to be paid, and it must be paid, then is it not better to face yourself now rather than waiting for some future date when you have only added to the ignorance of the soul and the price to be paid? Now is the time. This is the place to begin that journey in earnest, willing to pay whatever price is to be exacted, because you yourself created the debt. But remember, you are not alone. Sri Yoganandaji said that initiates have only to pay a third of the debt. God and Guru cover the rest. Be mindful of that grace is always pouring itself upon you, giving you strength, comfort, and courage throughout it all. For the sincere devotee, these helpers are a boon beyond comprehension. So make haste. The goal will become reality, and you will reclaim the blessings of the eternal truth residing in your divine self. I'm happy to be connecting with you once again through these posts as we journey together through fire and with grace in realizing the eternal self. And a dear devotee sent me a biblical quote, and I'm going to read from the entire chapter. It comes from Isaiah chapter 60, verses 19 through 20 is the quote she sent, but I'm reading from the entire chapter. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. Now we know where the term arise and shine comes from. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But the Lord shall rise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. And the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising. Lift up thine eyes round about, and see, all they gather themselves together. They come to see thee. Thy sons shall come from afar, and thy daughters shall be nursed at thy side. Then thou shalt see and flow together, and thy heart shall fear and be enlarged, because the abundance of the sea shall be converted unto thee. The forces of the Gentiles shall come unto thee. The multitude of camels shall cover thee. The dromedaries of Midian and Ephah, all they from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense, and they shall show forth the praises of the Lord. All the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered together unto thee. The rams of Nebaioth shall minister unto thee. They shall come up with acceptance on mine altar, and I will glorify the house of my glory. Who are these that fly as a cloud, and as the doves to their windows? Surely the isles shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish first, to bring thy sons from afar, their silver and their gold with them, unto the name of the Lord thy God, and to the Holy One of Israel, because he hath glorified thee. And the sons of strangers shall build up thy walls, and their kings shall minister unto thee. For in my wrath I smote thee, but in my favor have I had mercy on thee. Therefore thy gates shall be open continually. They shall not be shut day nor night, that men may bring unto thee the forces of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought. For the nation and the kingdom that will not serve thee shall perish, yea, those nations shall be utterly wasted. The glory of Lebanon shall come unto thee, the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box together, to beautify the place of my sanctuary, and I will make the place of my feet glorious. The sons also of them that afflicted thee shall come bending unto thee, and all they that despise thee shall bow themselves down at the soles of thy feet. And they shall call thee the city of the Lord, the Zion of the Holy One of Israel. Whereas thou hast forsaken and hated, so that no man went through thee, I will make thee an eternal excellency, a joy of many generations. Thou shalt also suck the milk of the Gentiles, and shalt suck the breast of the kings, and thou shalt know that I, the Lord, am thy Savior and thy Redeemer, the Mighty One of Jacob. For brass I will bring gold, and for iron I will bring silver, and for wood, brass, and for stones, iron. I will also make thy officers peace, and thine exactors righteousness. Violence shall be no more heard in thy land, wasting nor destruction within thy borders. But thou shalt make thy walls salvation, and thy gates praise. The sun shall be no more thy light by day, neither for brightness shall the moon give thee unto thee light. But the Lord shall be unto thee an everlasting light, and thy God thy glory. The sun shall go no more down, neither shall thy moon withdraw itself. For the Lord shall be thine everlasting light, and days of thy mourning shall be ended. Thy people shall be all righteousness. They shall inherit the land forever, and the branch of my planting, the works of my hands, that I have been glorified. A little one shall become a thousand, and a small one a strong nation. I, the Lord, will hasten it in its time. Now, throughout the Old Testament Bible, what we call the Old Testament, and throughout the New Testament, and in many scriptures all around the world, there are these promises that are made. Promises for 1,000 years of peace, promises for all people living in righteousness, being a land of ease, of milk and honey, and so on. And these are wonderful promises, and many people put great stock into them, and for thousands and thousands of years, they have been looking for these days, a days when their particular nation shall rise up, and all others shall bow at their feet, where there shall be peace and no conflict or strife, and so on. These are the promises. These are the prophets that have written these things, and you have to ask yourself, when so many thousands of years have passed by and these promises are not fulfilled, then are they false promises? What is the promise that God gives to us if we are to aspire for Him and gain Him in realization? This is a tremendous question because we have many ideas embedded deep in our own consciousness where we think that we have made a deal with God. That if we seek Him, that if we worship Him and love Him and strive to do everything according to His will, that our outer circumstances will become easy, that there will be peace, there will not be strife, that we will be able to overcome everything and that others will even think well of us, even our enemies will come to that point. And yet, we look at the lives of the saints, we look at the lives of so many realized masters, and we see it's far from that. In fact, oftentimes, their lives are filled with conflict, difficulty, sufferings of various kinds. And so man looks further and further down the road. One day it will come. Every so often, you hear from the pulpit, those days are here. All of the signs are here. The end times are come, which means that the evildoers will be punished and thrown out, and that it will only be those who love God, seek the light and righteousness, and everything will be in perfect peace and harmony. But how long, O Lord, how long shall we wait? How long until that promise is fulfilled? Even within our yoga traditions, we see that there is much talk. Master wrote quite a bit about meditation and the prolonging of life and having perfect health. These things are not wrong, but as we see with Master's own life, he didn't even make it to the year 60 in his own life. not by far, a long life, and that there are many others who have had shortened lives, Swami Vivekananda, Swami Ramatirtha, and many others, who did not live long lives, and yet they have had a great effect on this world. There are those who teach perfect health. If you align yourself with God, then you will have perfect health. And I remember Swami Satchidananda telling me about when Joel Goldsmith came to visit at an ashram, and Joel Goldsmith wrote quite a bit about there being, if your thoughts are perfect, then your health will be perfect. And he had many demonstrations of healings where this is true. And Master healed many people as well. And that perfect health was achieved. And there was freedom from disease and other kinds of problems. And yet we see where others suffer. And Master himself suffered. In the last years of his life, he had to be carried from one place to another in a chair because his legs were in such bad condition and so painful. I remember at a time when Mother's legs were very, very painful, and I used to get on one side of a dining room chair when we were meeting at Bonnie's. And another gentleman would get on the other side, and we would pick Mother up in that chair, and we would carry up those steps so that she didn't have to negotiate those steps, which were very painful for her. And so we see many examples where people do suffer. And when Swami Satchidananda was driving Joel Goldsmith to the train after he had delivered his lectures, Swami Satchidananda ventured a question. He says, I noticed that in your talks here, you don't talk about if your thoughts are perfect, then your health will be perfect. And Joel said, no, I've learned not to do that here because in India, people will ask me, well, what about Ramana Maharshi, acknowledged to be the saint of the highest realization? And yet he is bent over. He had a lot of physical problems and a lot of physical pain. And if he's fully realized, and if he's suffering like this, then how do you square the two? And he couldn't. And so Swami Satchidananda said, as a side comment to me, he said, unproven theories. Because he had seen in his own life where Papa had suffered due to various ailments, that he had pain and difficulties and sickness, that Mataji was expected to leave the body before Papa, even though she was younger, because her health was so delicate and it was so difficult for her. So if we are to then try to bring those two ideas together. Now, it is true that as we put ourselves in alignment with truth, with light, and with God, our lives will surely improve. But do we look to these outer circumstances to provide proof of what has been attained within? And I do not think that is the promise. Although it can be a natural outcome, Master described how one man began to meditate deeply, even though in the beginning he couldn't sit still more than for a couple of minutes at a time because he had some kind of physical problem that produced great pain for him. But through consistency and devotion and dedication in his efforts, he gradually got to where he could meditate for long hours in the day without pain and difficulty. And then one day, he opened his eyes from meditating and his body was in perfect condition. So there is a truth in all of this. I know that there are individuals, I've spoken to them, they're very focused on having long life, absolutely no disease or difficulties. There are those who are very focused on not having to eat anything, that they can live by air and light alone. Now, I think that there have been those individuals down through time who have done this. And so there is a reality that is behind it. And yet we see many saints of great realization who eat, who do not live by sunlight only, air only. They live by food. They get tired. They get hungry, and so on. And so if this is the case, then what is the bargain that we make with God? What is the agreement? What is it that we get? If we put ourselves into His harmony, into His light, into dedicating ourselves to a life of realization. I was speaking to a dear devotee who was talking about an early experience that he had had where one of the other young men that they were out on a trip with tipped over in a canoe and he drowned. And it had, of course, a profound effect on him. And it came up when we were talking about trust in God. Trust in God. What if I trust God? Here the water seemed to be calm, but there was an undercurrent that was occurring that nobody had recognized. And when the canoe went over, it caused this young man to drown. A terrific, horrible experience to go through for everybody. So you think, all right, well, if I trust God then, will that mean nobody gets hurt? Nobody grows old? Nobody gets sick? Nobody dies? Well, we look around us and we ask, where does that occur exactly? That nobody grows old, nobody gets sick, nobody dies. And we don't see many examples of that. So what is it that we get if we really dedicate ourselves in this light, in this life? And here, I think, is the answer is given, because it talks here in this Bible scripture as if the countries of the world are going to bow down to Israel and that they will triumph and everyone will serve them and so on. That's, you can interpret it, you can see it in that way. And yet we look at the history and we see that's not been the way that it has been. And it says here, the sun shall be no more thy light by day, neither for brightness shall the moon give thee light, but the Lord shall be unto thee an everlasting light, and thy God thy glory. The sun shall no more go down, neither shall the moon withdraw itself, for the Lord shall be shine thine everlasting light, and the days of thy mourning shall be ended. Thy people shall all be righteousness. They shall inherit the land forever, the branch of my planting, the work of my hands, that I may be glorified. So we're not looking for the sun to disappear and that God will be our light in an outer sense, nor that the moon shall no longer wax and wane. These things have gone on for so long, they will, in all likelihood, continue for a very long time to come. But this is all an internal experience. And the outer light that you see and that you have begins to pale. And those various waxings and wanings of the moon, and for that matter, all experiences in life, begin to recede in importance as that inner light within your own being and your own consciousness begins to burn more brightly. Lari Mahashai had a disciple who was blind and had been for a very long time, and someone asked him to ask the master for a healing. And so he did. But really, in his heart, he didn't care whether his eyes saw the light or not, because the inner light, the inner glory, was shining so terrifically. In fact, in the example of another man, he was given that boon or offered, and he said, no, I don't want it. He said, I'm so thrilled with this inner light that I see, and I see it continuously. I'm concerned that if these two eyes were healed and I saw the light of the day, I would become distracted. And so I want to keep my mind interiorized. I don't want it drawn back out into the five senses in the way that it had once been. Now, people will talk about this world as if it is evil. but it is not. But it is a great distraction. It is so enticing. It draws us so greatly that we tend to put everything into this world. Just in these last recent months, Babaji, as it was given to me inwardly, had arranged for this palace of a house that we now live in. And it's our version of a palace, as Lari Mahashai was given a palace for some time, and then it was withdrawn. And perhaps one day Babaji will see the need is up, and he'll withdraw it, and we'll be on our way. But when I sit in this house, and I close these two eyes, the house disappears. I could be anywhere in this world. And I see there the inner glory of God. I see that beautiful light shining all through the cranium. The brain is lit up with this light. There's a beautiful light shining at the point between the eyebrows. The spine is lit up and light is all around. And I see this beautiful golden light. And it's all pervasive. And there's a white light. And it's all merged into one so that it's a white, yellow, golden light. It has all three variations. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful beyond comparison. And when I open these two eyes, many people, they try to meditate for some time. And they struggle with it. And then they open their eyes, they enter back out into the world. And that's what's comfortable to them. And they feel like, oh, okay, I'm back again. Now I need to go about my day. And the interior world, they seem a bit more of a stranger to, but for me, it's reversed. The interior world is where I'm at home. And oftentimes, when I open these eyes and I move out into this world, that takes great concentration, and I have to keep my mind on God first, of course. But also, just to be able to enter into this world is an act of will, and that's what is more difficult for me. And so the mind becomes more interiorized, and I can easily understand how yogis can withdraw themselves into caves and away from the busyness of life. And that becomes so real to them. That is reality with a capital R. And this outer expression is reality with a small r. Now, it's still the case that I still will be called to food. I will get hungry. This body can get tired. It's not that I don't have any connection with this body or this earth. It still functions in many ways the way that it always has. But inwardly, I feel completely different. I have memory. It feels like a distant dream now of a sort, of long years of struggle, where I would have episodic experiences in God. And as I continued, it became more and more consistent. Up until the dark night of the soul, I was in a fairly continuous sense of connection with God and feeling of God. And then suddenly, all of that was taken away. And I was bereft. I was absolutely devastated. And if it had not been for Mother's teachings around telling me about the dark night of the soul, I don't know how I would have reacted otherwise. But in this case, I had those teachings. I was able to put it into some context. I realized, and God showed me, how it was a dark night of the soul. I didn't know how long it would last. And at the time, I'm rather glad I didn't. Because it was a total of 2 years, which is a very long time to be completely absent of God. And nothing on the outer circumstances began to really change, but something inwardly awakened, and I had a vision where I was walking through a desert. But it wasn't a dry, awful, terrible kind of desert. It was this, the path was spongy as I walked on it. The air smelled so sweet. It was a desert in bloom and flowering, and I breathed in the air and had been so long since I had felt anything close to comfort in this way. And I just let out a cry. It was just so meaningful to me. And I thought, God, at last you're back. At last you're back. And so it was a long time, but it's a gradual coming out. It was having God sometimes and not other times. Now, one thing this cures us of is an indifference to God or taking him for granted, because, believe it or not, you can be feeling God, you can be uplifted in God, and the mind starts playing with that a little bit. You start deviating a little bit. Your intensity of sadhana is not quite what it was. And then when that experience goes away, you feel so devastated by it, you have to work so hard at it to get it back. And then you get it back. You open that door and it starts flooding into you, flowing into you without end, as it says here in these scriptures. And it does, it just does. And then you think it's endless. And again, the ego inserts itself in there. And so it goes through that over and over and over again until the ego sense is completely eradicated, until there is no part of you that wants to be anywhere else other than with God. And you come to that point of complete surrender. Now you have to face those things that have disappointed you. Whether it was a broken love, whether it was a death, whether it was illness, whatever it is, it will rear its head. As you move into this place of complete surrender, and what the devil, that ego inside of you, will tell you is that you surrender to God, this worst case scenario will happen. This death, this illness, this poverty, whatever it is that resides deep in the unconscious will come up, and you have to face it. And you say, all right, I'm willing to surrender to God, even if this may happen. Even if he were to take away a dear one. Even if he were to take away my life. Even if I were to become ill. Even if I, whatever it is. And you come to that place of complete surrender. Now, this is not an easy thing. We can think in our minds, oh, sure, no problem. Until it happens to us, until that fear comes up, that attachment. And when it does, it's powerful. It grabs at you. And it can come in subtle ways. Sometimes we think it comes in a big storm. Sometimes it comes in a whispering breeze, and it's just a little desire. It's just a little something that begins to call you. But if you give in to it, it quickly builds up speed, and suddenly it dominates you. And you have to fight it. You have to fight it. If we just go along with it, it can sweep us out into the ocean of delusion. And who knows that we will ever find ourselves, at least for a long time to come. We have to have humility. We have to have surrender, total surrender, 100%. We have to keep our mind fixed on God, loving God, serving God, meditating upon him. And if we are not doing these things, and we call ourselves devotees, we are not being truthful with ourselves. We are not really doing all that we can to reach our God realization. It comes in very subtle ways. It says that the serpent is a subtle beast. And it's true. It wiggles its way into our mind, tries to convince us. It uses our own voice to try to reason it through. When Arjuna started arguing with Krishna that he didn't want to be out on that battlefield, he didn't want to face these oppositional forces. He just wanted to retire in peace up into some cave. It's a fantasy. He's not alone in it. We've all had it. And that Krishna, Arjuna is quoting scriptures to Krishna to support his case. Krishna does not go along with it. It was for this moment you were born. You must face these oppositional forces. And win, lose, or draw, you keep your mind on me and you will be a spiritual success. Now, he doesn't say a worldly success. That may happen. But he says, forget about the world. Forget about outer events. Keep your mind focused on God. And you will be a spiritual success. So what is the promise? The promise is the presence of God. It is in that peace, that joy, that light, that realized understanding that we come to know our eternal oneness with God. This is the only guarantee as we enter into this path. There is nothing else. Now, there may be healings. There certainly have been. There will be. There will be great prosperity. There will be all kinds of things that happen that seem even miraculous. But these are not evidence in and of themselves of total God realization. Only the everlasting presence of God. And that everything inside of you, these scriptures are describing how these different nations come and will now be your servants, will now be in support of you, and everybody will be focused on God. This is an internal experience, as all these various aspects of yourself are gathered together, and now you are one unified consciousness, all attuned and working for God. This is a great transformation. And the world may ridicule you. You may not have great wealth. You may not have anything at all. Except you will have God. And so let us not confuse what it is that we're after here. Doesn't mean that we can't aspire for all good things in life. And that God will help to bring them about. But it is not the guarantee. The guarantee is the presence of God. And in the presence of God, you can be in a one-room apartment with a bathroom, and that's it. Maybe you don't even have that, and you will be happy. Think of Papa roaming around India, penniless, homeless, to all appearances a vagrant. And yet, the smile on him, the bliss that he has, the realization of God that he has is priceless. So let us not be fixated upon things on the outside. If they come, good. If they don't, God, give us the strength and the grace to rise above circumstances, if they should not be favorable from a human standpoint, and that we should still know thee, enjoy thee, love thee, be in thy bliss, thy light, thy joy forevermore. Om. Namaste. Bow to the great light within you. May God ever protect you, bless you, and keep you in his presence, now and always.